What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 83 of Value Town. I'm Chan Minby, and
always
done. Come on, y'all. So I'm Chan Minby. He's Noxious, and our guest today is Zalay. What's going on, guys? You moved on me, man. You already moved on me.
I'm sneaky.
I did nothing. Exactly. Also, why did your hand show up in my webcam frame, Chan Man?
My hand? Oh, is my hand in there? Oh, okay, anyways. That's because I'm touching you. That's why.
Looks beautiful. We're doing great.
Exactly. That's why. Anyways, guys, welcome to Value Town. starting on a great note there. Yeah. So exciting times in Hearthstone, and just with the release of, obviously, mid-release of One Night in Karazhan. So I figured we'd have some more discussions on decks and cards. Also, HCT European prelims happened this past week, so talk a little bit about that, as well as bringing back Mechatorix Workshop, because a lot of you guys love that segment. So we've got a few cards that we've come up with, or a few concepts that we've come up with, so we'll talk about. And then viewer Q&A at the end, go ahead and tweet your questions to me, at ChamMV, and we'll try to read some at the end. If you don't have Twitter, we'll take Twitch chat. We'll take a question or two from Twitch chat, too. So you're included, too, Twitch chat. Don't worry. All right, so our week in Hearthstone, guys. Big week for Zalay here, given that he joined a new team, Luminosity Gaming. Congratulations on that, man. How you feel?
Thanks. Feels good. I'm really happy with my new team. Bunch of great teammates. I met the leadership. They're cool guys, and the move just makes a lot of sense to me, right? Because Archon's moving away from competitive Hearthstone, and Luminosity's now like the number one team in North America, so it's exactly where I want to be.
Yeah, joining Muzzy, Chalky, Frozen, Phone Tap. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a team full of really, really good players right there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Funny enough, none of them have like this crazy big win, right? Which is kind of like unfortunate.
Chalky just had a big one.
All right, he had the DreamHack Austin, but it's one of those things where, like, Chalky for so long was kind of under the radar. Frozen Muzzy, yourself, Phone Tap. It's kind of like you've been around for literally ever. But it's one of those things where everybody knows the quote unquote big names, but they don't. It doesn't spring to mind.
Yeah, I think. These are guys that were maybe under the radar for the general public, but for players like myself who, are in competitive Hearthstone, I've always known who these guys are and known that they're good. So I'm definitely happy to be working with them. And I'm about to have a big month. I have a bunch of important tournaments coming up. Like this weekend is NA prelims, and then I have a couple more tournaments after that. I don't know if I can talk about them, but I'm excited for it. It's good.
Yeah,
nothing.
Every single year, September, October into BlizzCon is always just craziness in terms of the Hearthstone community. So not surprised that there's a bunch of events coming up, but that's really exciting for you, man. It's great that you got a team backing you now. Really, really good. All right, so Archon, I guess Team Archon is getting away like officially now, right? From competitive Hearthstone. You leaving obviously was, I think, you were the last player, right?
Well, no, they still have Amnesiac, and he's pretty good.
That's right.
So they're not out of the scene entirely. And Amaz is a good player when he chooses to practice competitive Hearthstone.
He hasn't for a while.
I mean, the Amaz vs. World Series is pretty fun. I just saw Chalky on it today.
No, it's a lot of fun.
Yes. you gotta market that Amaz value though, man. That's where the Archon value is at.
Always trying new things, man. It's definitely good. So all right, Karazhan. So this past week, the prologue and Wing 1 were out. So I figured we'd talk a little bit about our experience finishing that just regular and heroic. So any kind of cool, funny things, or maybe what decks did you use to finish heroics, Zalay?
I just used Patron to beat the heroic decks. It was really easy.
Really?
That's what I did too.
I was just like, good luck.
I used Warrior too, but I didn't do Patron.
Yeah.
Like, Ravaging Ghoul sounds pretty good against these guys.
Chess, I lost a bunch of times until I got, like, that knight-bishop combo going. You just have to have such a good early game or else you're going
to
get wrecked.
Well, you have to get three pawns right off the bat or you're just fucked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by early game, I'm talking about turns, like, through five. Yeah. Your first, like, five turns have to be good.
Yeah.
You got to pull ahead and just snowball that lead hard because you just run out of cards.
How many times did it take for you to do it?
I'm going to say five. I don't know.
Yeah, it took me three, surprisingly. It wasn't... I almost finished it on the first one. I think I screwed up one of the moves at the end to totally... I think I had... I think the guy had one health left. I couldn't hit the guy.
That happened to me, too. He wasn't one health. My queen was, like, 15th card of the deck.
I think that was my first try.
Attempt, queen was the last card, and I was like, oh, they might have not given me one to make it really, really hard.
Yeah.
And then second attempt, where I did it, was queen, like, fifth card from the top. Almost on curve, and it was ridiculous. Like, you rook in the middle, and then you keep it healed up with a knight, with a bishop between them, and it's just an auto win.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, if they get a knight early that you can't handle, you're screwed. You're just completely screwed.
Right.
Yep, that's pretty much true.
I just didn't realize at first that, like, I had such a small deck, right? Like, the first time I was playing through it, I was like, oh, this is good. I'm ahead. This is great. I'm going to crush this guy. And I was like, so I have zero cards, and he's killing a minion every turn, and he's still drawing cards?
Exactly, right.
No, that's not working.
That's where the puzzle comes in. Right?
They changed my hero power. That's it. Oh, we're good to go. No, they literally have your pieces.
No, I love the hero power too, where you can just shift the position of things because that was really, really important too as you get closer to the end of the game. But easily my favorite boss encounter, like out of all the adventures so far. How about you guys? How's it rank for you guys in terms of all the adventures and bosses?
Yeah, it might be the coolest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the Medivh fight, the prologue, what I really loved is how they captured the essence of the mage class and just pushed it to the limit. And it's still like, imagine a world in which Hearthstone is actually balanced that way for both players. Like the game is so insanely swingy. Like the thing is, you can't stop it. It becomes a game of OTKs, but they really did it well. Like it's not they gave us like a half-assed array of cards that were individually overpowered.
Right.
Everything worked together, and you saw that they had like this vision. And you drew enough cards through the little minions that let you cycle them again and again and again. It was a beautiful deck design. So, like that I thought was, if not the best encounter, because I thought chess was better overall.
Yeah.
I think it just shows that they really get boss fights and PvE in Hearthstone. I think they're starting to nail it.
Yeah. I mean, thematically, too, it was...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just awesome, right? This whole Beauty and the Beast type of feel, right, with the dishes. And then the mirror. I mean, easily the funniest boss, right? I mean, there are some other funny ones, too. But that one, I think, takes it. Just some of the funny remarks he makes to Moreau.
I like the idea of beating people up with silverware is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Arming a spoon? Dude. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I'm
forked.
Forked Nazoth. You're going to love that, dude. I've got a crazy good Nazoth list with four.
That card is surprisingly a little better than I expected it to be. I thought it was trash when we were reviewing it.
I thought it was garbage, and I actually turned out to be pretty good. I don't know what's up. I feel like
I nailed that one. I don't know what I said, but I felt like this card's not that bad. Like, it's all
right. Yeah.
I mean, you're right, because Deadly Poison takes a slot, and you're like, this is a minion and Deadly Poison together. So, yeah, all hail the new fork.
Yeah, it's like, two mana, 3/2, you plus one mana to draw a card, right? Like, it's okay.
I think a lot of people have the expectation of just arming the weapon immediately, so they just react in that fashion.
Nice. That would be
disgusting, right? But still, the card draw, the card drawing and drawing a Fiery War Axe, dude, that's pretty good, or at least something similar to Fiery War Axe. It's a little bit more expensive, right? Is it three? It's three mana, right?
It's three, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
the thing is, I'll play Eaglehorn Bow in a lot of decks with no synergy whatsoever. Just three mana, 3/2 weapon, I think, is pretty solid in Hearthstone right now.
Yeah, true.
Rallying Blade, played in Paladin without Divine Shields anyway. Mm-hmm. Just a Nazoth inclusion for removal on three health minions. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so the next wing's going to come out tomorrow. Obviously, we'll be talking about tomorrow's wing just next week. But what are you looking forward to in the next wing?
Personally, I mean, I think for me, the biggest one is the 4-mana 3/4. I think it's Barnes that spawns a 1/1 copy of the minion in your deck. So it's really good with death rattles. It's good with things like Emperor. You get that at the end of your turn, or either Ragnaros at the end of your turn. It's also just good with stuff like Knife Juggler or, I mean, it's not great with Knife Juggler, but it's okay. right? Like if the 1-1 sticks around, it's very, very threatening.
I think it triggers as well when it comes into play right away, because Barnes would summon it before it's considered entered in the play.
Oh, really? Well, so you get a shot.
How confident are you on that?
It's like Deathlord Wild Pyro. I'd put it pretty high up.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So the Q is that
maybe
way.
I'm wrong.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
It's particularly good in Hunter, because also there's the 3-4 that makes your secrets free. You get a 1-1 of those, and your secrets are free, right? So now instead of playing 2 of that card, you're playing like 2.2 of that card,
yeah,
right?
That's what I like.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about that one. So speaking of all the different scenarios, somebody actually posted today on Reddit, like all the different types of, like, or not every single card, obviously, but some very key cards from each of the classes. Here, I'll post it in chat here. I'll post it.
I'm gonna let you that.
Yeah, I'll post
honestly,
it.
Honestly, though, like, I really, as much as I want to love the card and be hyped for it, I hate Fandral being 4 mana just because of how easy it is for that one class to get it out early and then snowball out of control. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Barnes just gives everyone a Fandral if they nail. The absolute lack of strategy involved in like rolling well on it. So, as much as I like it, I'm just afraid that it becomes this. You know, you commentate a game and everything's potentially lining up to be an exciting game, and then oh hey, he rolled Tyrion. Oh, let's have fun. It's just one of those things. I think the coolest
part about Barnes isn't necessarily. I mean, I think you're right. Like once you have a deck set, it's going to be a lot of just crazy situations, and they're all generally going to be good because you're building the deck so that they're all good, right? But I like the fact that you build a deck around it.
Let's say 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
You don't even build around it. That's the fucked up part about
Barnes. You don't have to, but if you do, then it's like almost all.
You don't want to.
Yeah, you don't want to. You put it in a deck where it's good.
You literally shove it anywhere, and 10% of the time it wins you a game right away. That is fucktarded. Like, that card should not exist.
I have to agree with Noxious on this. Like, it's going to be some very feels bad RNG that you have like very little control over, and you don't build your deck around it. You're right, because like by default you're getting 4 mana, 4 or 5 worth of stats.
Yeah,
it just doesn't cost
value.
You much to put in your deck, mm-hmm. and you don't want to like make your deck worse in the scenarios where you don't draw it. You just want to, you know, sometimes it's good.
Oh, no, what I meant was when you build a deck around it, it just means, meaning like, you know, you just take into account that Barnes and what other cards
sure.
are you can get a lot of value from. Yeah,
yeah,
not from
it's
the standpoint
a factor.
Of, yeah, yeah.
But you don't want to trap yourself by like trying to only play cards that are good when you Barnes them.
Yeah,
you charge.
Yeah, right.
you should make a good deck and put Barnes in if it's good.
Gotcha.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's very Yogg-Saron-ish then. It's just a miracle win or some type of just crazy swing in a given deck already. We didn't need more of those cards, unfortunately.
I'm kind of scared of it in Hunter, honestly. Like, I'm scared of a Hunter dropping this on floor and just getting like anything from Infested Wolf, Kindly Grandmother, High Mane, even a huge Toad or any ping minion is just good enough in and of itself. It's kind of scary in Hunter.
Yeah, and Hunter, I think, is the one that's gaining the most from tomorrow's swing opening between Kindly Grandmother and Barnes. Kindly Grandmother in particular, it's exactly what Hunter needs, right?
Yeah.
You have High Mane on 6, you have Call the Wild on 8. These are really strong plays, but Hunter early game is weak. You get run over, you get killed. This is 4-3 worth of stats for 2 mana, way ahead of the curve. So if you can use it effectively, maybe play something like Abusive Sergeant in there, then to use the 1-1 body effectively. Or also, it's threatening with Houndmaster.
It's crazy.
How
good
do you,
That's how I always interpreted it. It was like a Houndmaster buff. Because
I know you like the card a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like, Chairman, I know, like, you were kind of hyped for the Hunter comeback. Mm-hmm. You're like getting like a lot of buzz for the class. So tomorrow's kind of your wing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all the Hunter cards, right? There's one more,
those
right?
There's the two big ones. There's the trap.
There's the trap, right? Yeah.
Oh, the trap's going to be good, too.
Yeah, the trap's good.
When I was reviewing this set, I didn't really like the trap, but having played with the 3-mana 3-4, was it Cloaked Huntress?
Yeah.
I think Cat Trap looks like better than a lot of traps that already see play in Cloaked Huntress decks.
Yeah, let's talk about
the better one in that deck, actually. But.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment, the tech. So we this segment, obviously, we're going to talk about decks, and it's going to be a combination of just showing some decks that people had success with this week or just some cool ones, as well as just conceptually just creating some kind of frame for this coming week. And in this particular case, Delay provided a abbreviated Hunter deck, which is the one on the very right. That's missing a few cards, but again, it's more of a concept for what's the grandmother coming and
it's intended for tomorrow when you add in two drop and Barnes.
Yeah, and Barnes. But let me explain what's here. So the two Hunter decks on the left are the ones that Firebat posted, probably a day or two after the wing came out, and they're definitely on the aggro side of play, given that it tops out at 3 and tops out at 4, both of these. One's just a little bit slower than the other. But this is more for, like, this week, you know, just, like, immediately right now, like, these type of cards. What's your thoughts on those hunters? The left one, the leftmost one, starting with that one. Noxious, how about you? Why don't you lead off with this?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the, like, this is a Cloaked Huntress lock and load build, yeah. Which, you know, Reyna talked a lot about in the past weeks, talking about Karazhan and whatnot. And I've been deck building or brewing that kind of list, you know, since the card came out, the Cloaked Huntress. The idea was to run, like, a Yogg and load Emperor Thorsen shenanigan, and I very quickly realized the last thing you want to do is play that. So as you speed up the deck more and more, you end up realizing playing the whole, you know, there was an early version in Whispers of the Old Gods of the you know, aggro hunter with On the Hunt with Blood Mage Thalnos, like it got a kind of push with some spell damage being sprinkled in, which was kind of wonky. But this is basically like an even more pushed version thanks to Huntress, because you don't need Animal Companion because it's almost quote-unquote too slow. You want to guarantee the Wolf Rider value, and the way that Firebat build this is essentially the better version of a Cloaked Huntress lock and load, in my mind at least. There's probably a few tweaks to make, like here and there. Like I wouldn't hate modifying some, you know, secrets around depending, but like the lock and load control hunter dream is still not here. Like I haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. It's still just not here.
And just for folks listening on audio, because we have a lot of Valley Town listeners, this deck is, like Noxious said, very very much like the lock and load or Yogg and load decks that you see, but it doesn't have Yogg in it. But lots of those lock and load decks you see, it's got all the arcane shots and the On the Hunt tracking all the trap or most of the traps. It's quick shot. It's got the Cloaked Huntress, Eaglehorn Bow, Kill Command, Unleash, Wolf Rider, and it also has like one Novice Engineer just because it needs some kind of draw. But Zalay, what do you think about this one?
I've played tested a little bit with Firebat against these sorts of decks, and it's really annoying trying to figure out how to play optimally against like a pile of secrets.
Seriously.
It's a deck where it's like the cards individually have super low power level. It's like all these janky traps and lock and load, but it has a heavy amount of synergy to make up for it, right? So the most obvious thing that you're trying to set up is a turn where you go lock and load, Cloaked Huntress, 5 secrets, draw 5 cards, right? There's a little bit of awkwardness there where lock and load is like a value card and we're playing sort of more of a smork based game plan. We're playing like Face Hunter, right? Where we just want a Wolf Rider and each town's an explosive trap and just hit him in the face with our hero power.
Right.
And we're not really trying to win the board or outvalue people, but we are building around lock and load. But you know what? Sometimes it works out, and it like the synergy is so powerful, maybe it's okay anyways. I think this is probably not the strongest tournament deck, but it's like definitely good enough to win a bunch of games on ladder.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the consistency is. I mean, you can definitely win. I can see winning over 50% with this, but because of the lack of card draw, you know, like that dream scenario or that card drawing scenario is tough to come by sometimes, right?
Yeah, but you can always get the usual lock and load value, right? Like we're talking the dream scenario of Huntress vomit all your hand, but sometimes it's just, you know, turn 4, lock and load, coin, arcane shot, On the Hunt, tracking, you get 3 extra cards, dig for 1.
Yeah.
You've done very little, but if you have a bow set up, very often you snipe, like you kill something with it. You're one of your secrets is probably on the board, and you've been defusing the board with your bow. Since you have so many traps to trigger, they either don't feed your bow, which means they just don't deal any damage, so you're fine.
Right.
Or you've been killing stuff with it because they keep feeding you charges. So I really like the way the deck plays, even though you end up with a lot of awkward hands. And sometimes you have to, you know, pray that lock and load in and of itself without Cloaked Huntress carries you. I mean, just picking up one Call of the Wild sometimes just lets you win the late game. You don't even have to play them in the deck.
So here's a question. Crazy. Why not just throw a Yogg in here? Like, I mean, how many spells because are there in here? Holy
you don't
crap.
Want to get. To
I mean, the reason is it costs 10 mana.
True. I guess
and you don't want games going that long.
I guess you don't get to 10 with this deck, yeah. But it's really cool, though. It's a very spell-heavy deck. So the middle one, or the one on the right that Firebat presents here, is more... There's definitely a lot more minions in this deck. This is more, yeah, I guess along the lines of... I don't know, just I mean, it's not as much charge minions like Wolf Rider and whatnot. There's definitely more 2-drops and solid 3-drops here. But we're talking Beasts of Sargents and Argent Squires and Direwolves, Freezing Traps, Huge Toads, Knife Juggler. See anything else that stands out? Infested Wolf, really just topping out. And it's got the close Huntress too. Right? Like, it's got the Huntress too. Not as many traps here. So the Huntress is probably... right on the edge of actually being, you know, being consistent with the amount of value you get. But this type of hunter is obviously really powerful too. We've seen in the past. And I mean, with Grandmother, who knows, like I could see Grandmother fitting into this type of deck better than the other
100%. One. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I don't know if you've played tested against that, Zalay, but like, I think the importance of Cloaked Huntress in the deck is just that it's a 3-mana minion in this deck, as opposed, which is one of the better ones that Hunter can include, as opposed to being more damage or like a later card. Because this is still on the aggressive side of Hunter, right?
Yeah, I really like this deck. I like it quite a bit better than the first one. I think it's definitely the kind of deck that'll take you to Legend if you play it a lot, although not if there's really time anymore. And like you said, it's great with that new 2-drop. The Knife Juggler synergy is intense with this deck, right? There's Snake Trap, Unleash, and you add that 2-drop for another Death Rattle minion. Also, the fact this deck uses the 1-1 body of the 2-drop really well because it has Abusive Sergeant, Direwolf Alpha to buff it up so it can actually trade into more meaningful things. Also, there's Infested Wolf for the Knife Juggler. That's another synergy there. But there's kind of these two decks are trying to use Cloaked Huntress in different ways. The first one was sort of trying to get lock and load value off Cloaked Huntress. This one is trying to just get tempo off of Cloaked Huntress so that you pull ahead on board so much that your opponent can't deal with everything you have, and you just get to hit them in the face repeatedly turn after turn with your minions because they're just behind on mana. You spent so much more mana because you got a free secret played. And so I really like this deck. It's a nice tempo deck. You get ahead and you beat them up.
Yeah, it's got that feel of just just your typical hunter, honestly. You know, when you get a freezing trap and you get a huntress on the board, there's a lot of times, like you said, you just no looking back at that point, right? So how about the deck that you're the abbreviated deck that you have here? How is this deck different? Oh, this deck obviously goes more like beyond the mid-range, 4 mana. Like
very slower version.
This is sort of like the second deck.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the second deck. It moves to it's just a mid-range hunter that tries to adapt the new cards that are coming out tomorrow. So if you wanted to have a starting point, you put in two of the new 2-drop and you put in a Barnes, and you're going to get a lot of value out of those cards from this deck. You have a Houndmaster and two Abusive to make that 1-1 body more relevant, and it's just a pile of good stuff with a curve to it and some balance.
Yeah, just adding, I guess, 4. So the Huge Toad, you still think that's a necessary one, or at least 2 of them, if you're going to be adding Grandmother?
You need 2-drops, right?
You need some 2-drops. Yeah, which one is debatable. I lean towards Huge Toad. The second deck, it had Argent Squire and Direwolf Alpha. This deck doesn't have room for that because it's trying to extend the curve up to High Main and Call the Wild. Not as much because I want High Main, but because I want Call the Wild, and if I'm playing 8s, I might as well play High Mains along the way, right?
You have to get there even might better. As well. More consistently.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just don't have room for the Argent Squires, and without the Argent Squires, I probably prefer the Huge Toad over the Direwolf Alpha because it's just not buffing as many 1-drops on turn 2.
Yeah, so you got 1 Snipe and 1 Snake Trap, which is, you know, this is the dilemma I fall into sometimes where it's like, God, I want this trap for this matchup, and I want this trap for this matchup. So I end up adding 1 of each. Thoughts on that. Like, I guess Snipe in particular, because Snipe seems to be good against, I don't know, maybe half of the matchups, right? And where Snake Trap, generally what you're trying to accomplish, is good, I think, for every matchup.
Maybe. I think a lot of it is I just want to keep my opponents guessing, and I don't want to have 2 of the same traps stuck in my hand, or I play 1 and the other one's stuck in my hand and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just want to make life difficult for my opponent playing around my secrets correctly. So I like having a variety for that reason.
Yeah, cool.
As for the exact balance, I don't think there's a correct mix of traps. I think it changes from day to day, and there's also a lot of value in doing something different with your secret package than what other people are doing. If everyone else is playing 1 freezing, 1 snake, 1 explosive, you should just change that. Just do something different people play around the default list and play right into what you actually have.
Yeah, I mean, the new cat trick, the secret, really scares me because it adds another condition for you to check, like to check against Hunter. And unlike mages, I feel like you have even less time against Hunter to check for stuff. I don't have the luxury against Hunter to literally skip a beat and check for other stuff. So against Hunter, it's really just a matter of doing anything and hoping it works out, because they will punish the heck out of you if it doesn't work, which I feel like mages, you know, the way their secrets of, you know, works and scientists is out is basically, it's often just ice block in the slow decks, and you often just don't see any in the faster list. So when I see Hunter is getting an extra secret with a different condition. My head just does, and it's a good one. It's not like,
no, it's
here's a shitty jungle panther. You know, it's actually two mana, get a panther, which is also a beast. It's just, it's insane. That card just looks bonkers, and the punish of it is ridiculous.
Well, it's nice, too, because, you know, a trap like Bear Trap always required a minion to hit you in the face, you know, or obviously a weapon, too. Where this, you know, this makes up for those decks that are very spell-heavy, and they don't end up triggering that trap for whatever reason. Now they trigger this trap and actually lose tempo because of it. That's one thing that's really, really cool about cat trick.
I'm excited for it.
Bear Trap is worded such that it shouldn't wait until it hits you in the face. Let's say, like, after a hero's attacked. It doesn't any damage. The way that it functions is you actually have to take the damage. I mean, it's worded differently than explosive trap, so that makes sense. But, you know, it's not acting as a noble sacrifice, which is kind of what you want it to do very often, just stop something.
Yeah. true.
It's a weird one, the way Bear Trap works. But, yeah, I think Cat Trick's strong. I don't think it's insane, but I think it's stronger than I initially reviewed it. And, I mean, if you look at, like, how it compares to, like, the top four tournament decks right now, which is Aggro Shaman, Zoo, Druid and Warrior, right? And the Warrior can be a lot of things. Generally, Warrior has a hard time testing for a spell, so it's going to be pretty good there. Like, if they brawl, it spawns the 4/2 after the brawl, which is just insanely good, right?
That is ridiculous.
It is crazy.
Against Zoo, the cat trick's quite bad, right? It's only proccing if they play, like, Power Overwhelming or something off of a Peddler.
Right.
For Ritual, I guess, occasionally we'll get...
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, okay. But still, it's, like, pretty bad. That's like not proccing very early very often. They can play around it heavily with Druid, so it's good against Warrior, bad against Zoo. With Druid, they proc it all the time because their deck's a million spells for Yogg, but they have a good amount of control over however they proc it because they have cards like Innervate or Living Roots, or they just have a lot of cheap spells that can start their turn with Raven Idol. Is an excellent way to test for Cat Trick. So Druid, it's kind of like 50-50 against. Like, you're going to get the 4/2 cat, but they're going to have a good amount of influence over when and how, and they're going to be kind of okay against it, I think. Mm-hmm. And then what was the last one? Aggro Shaman. They're kind of stuck playing those Lightning Bolts and Rock Biters sometimes, right, for removal, and then boom, out comes a cat. It's going to bite them.
I mean, like, I wonder if you see Earth Shock make its way back into Shaman after Hunter gets the 1/1, because that gets shut down really hard, like the Kindly Grandmother with Earth Shock. Mm-hmm. If Barnes gets played, Earth Shock also, take care of this.
I don't want to Earth Shock a Barnes, but I like Earth Shock and a Kindly Grandmother. That's really
Because you would bring back the big minion. The issue is, like, if it's something you need to handle through damage, then you can actually make it happen. Like, if you don't want the effect to trigger, no Death Rattle to occur. It's one of those things where, like, Earthshock kind of phases in and out. I know the Chinese version of, like, Aggro Shaman runs it as a one of nowadays.
Just for taunt.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I put one in my Aggro Shaman for prelims.
Yeah,
one Earthshock.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Part of the reason is the uptick in Ancient of War in Yogg Druid.
Right.
So I want to be able to push through that. And it's just generally very often useful, you know, deal with those 1/1 Death Rattle, that 1/1 Divine Shield. There's a lot of that stuff running around right now.
What, silence is good, guys?
No. Hear me out.
It's only good when it does damage too, right? Or potentially does damage too.
Yeah, and if you silence a Doomsayer, you know, it's such a fist pump.
That's right.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not wasting 7 damage on this. It feels so bad.
Definitely good. All right, well, why don't we move on? A couple other decks. These are a couple decks that I've just been messing around. So I'm going to preface this with, these decks aren't good, guys. They're not necessarily good, but they're good discussion points, because I think these archetypes are starting to build up, and the question is whether they're there or not. So the first one is the Bolster Warrior, and this is literally just a hodgepodge of things, and I really just wanted to include a bunch of discussion points, because right now with Bolster Warrior, obviously the Protect the King came out, right? And everybody's obviously thinking about Bolster in terms of, you know, that card, given that you can have a bunch of 1/1s that have taunts on the board, and then that's like one of the few ways you can have multiple taunt minions in, you know, like a single burst, like, or single card like that. And then obviously bolstering that turns into a pretty nice turn if there is indeed a lot of enemy minions on the board. But that, gosh, I have the hardest time playing that card. I played that card so much, and it just feels so bad having a card be the most efficient when you're super far behind on the board, right? That's
protect the king.
Yeah, protect the king, right? Yeah, like really. So I mean that's like the biggest issue with obviously with that, but so we can discuss that. But I also threw in things like, you know, I think sparring partner has always been a card that's actually been interesting for the bolster deck.
I play Black Knight in that deck though, because you can always bolster the enemy, you can always sparring the enemy minion.
Yep, exactly. That's true. I should have put that
in. It's such a dream. I tried that for a couple games and I was like, this
It works though, and like the bolster deck, I'm not sure about, but like the Black Knight sparring partner, like when Reno Warrior like was around for about a week, that was one of the few removal pieces you could use. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so in here, I mean, there's that. There's obviously Faceless Shambler in here too. Just again, just to talk about it. So I guess the first question to pose is Bolster Warrior a thing right now, or do you see it starting to become a thing? And if it is it just more of a mid range deck? You know, like what can it be? Like, what's the potential of a bolster deck?
Like on day one, some people were having really good results with Bolster Warriors. I don't know if that was at High Legend. I think that might have been more like meme ranks. So I mean, I've played a little bit of Bolster Warrior, and it was kind of fun and kind of effective, but it didn't seem like, I don't know, it's a lot stronger than it looked to me on paper. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I still don't really have much faith in the deck.
What's the end game for a bolster deck?
I've seen Obsidian Destroyer. I think it was Trump's list or something. It's just like a large amount of big dudes, right? Because the bolster and the protecting are so bad against like a control deck. You need like a massive amount of threats if you want to have any kind of game against them. And they're so good against aggro that you can kind of afford to run a massive amount of these just big dumb taunts at the end of your curve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even mind like finding room for Sunwalkers and Psychotron. Like those cards are actually, I think those are actually underrated. Like the whole idea of having a control warlock, not even the Reno type, just a control warlock running, you know, the double psych, double shambler. Like you can build it like a handlock and just go full crazy on the taunt. That has kind of worked before, but it's actually not as taunt focused or synergistic, I guess, as the bolster deck.
The thing about control warlock is like with life tap and with your opponent doing damage to your face, you need some heal. And now that Healbot's gone, if you're not doing Reno, it just kind of doesn't. It's really hard to make that work.
Feels bad, man.
I tried some things with statue too, but it was just way too passive. Like, you know, I would get it, but then it was just like, man, how do I kill this guy? Like, I can't.
Yeah, you life tap, like, life tap.
Yeah,
die.
I get all
like,
this.
You're already
value.
Dead on turn four. Like, have the time against that.
Well,
girl.
I mean, even if I do get value, it's just like I just don't have tempo because this guy can't attack. You know, so it's like, okay, well, I got great value, but I'm still not killing my opponent. So that's why it's been tough, like trying to figure out just the right balance, I guess, for this type of deck. And when there is kind of some balance, then it's just like, is this really better than Dragon Warrior? I mean, this is not better than Dragon Warrior. So
yeah.
I still feel like it's pretty far behind. I mean, there's still ways and ways to go.
I've definitely had games with Protecting and Bolster where it just wins me. Like they make a bunch of 1/1s with whatever, with Teacher or Wisps, and I make a bunch of 3/3s and I execute their only big guy and I weapon a thing and they're like, oh my god, and I'm like, yeah, you're dead.
You're 1/3 up from their Savage Orb, but you're 1/3/3 up. You know, it's like what I like about the concept though is that it gives warriors like another Ravaging Ghoul, kind of, in some of the decks that might prefer to run like another copy of something like it that deals 1 damage in AoE. Mm-hmm. It's just really clunky against any metagame where people are teching against 1/1s, you happen to put yours down.
Right.
And if they're a deck that's teching against 1/1s, they won't give you any Protect the King value, so then it's pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
It's like everything that, you know, Protect the King tries to do feels like it's always a little bit too slow. Unleash the Hounds is obviously better because you get to use your guys now. I almost feel like Protect the King could have been 2 mana and still been okay. Like, that's how...
The thing about Protect the King, like when I was playing it, I was wishing, or even like mentally, it was in my head a bit, because when I, you know, was thinking about the card just normally, I was like, okay, average condition, probably 3, you know, you get 3 1/1s and maybe 4 1/1s, like whenever you want to use it. So I don't know. I had this mental thing where it's just like I kept thinking I would just get 3, but that's not the case, you know. And so
you never do. Yeah.
I kind of wish it was just put down 3 1/1s. Taunted.
With taunt, that'd be pretty bonkers.
Really? You think so?
For the warrior deck. I don't know, man. I don't want, like, I feel like the fact that it would be consistent against everything makes it, like, just imagine you're up against a priest for whatever reason, and you just drop 3 1-1s. It sounds like nothing, but if you're playing that bolster lame list, then they just can't ignore those. And if you had, if you played anything else in the early game, like with Blood to Iker, it's kind of scary to give Warriors any more consistency for tempo, like any earlier than, I don't know, dude. Like, I think Warriors have enough right now. Blood to Iker, they've got the Axe already. They've got Astralis Champion in the Dragon list. They play Frothing or Fierce Monkey on 3. Korkron on 4. If you give them another 3-cost consistent card, you might just break it.
Yeah, I think the key thing to keep in mind here is bolster, and it just goes really well with cheap taunts. Yeah. If you can play them together in the same turn, it's just way more effective. And so if you can consistently get, you know, 3 taunts out for 3 mana, that's really good with bolster.
Really good. 5 mana, new meta game.
Yeah, like if one taunt sticks for a turn and then you just play those 2 cards together, it's like, whoa.
It'd have to be a legend too. You can only do it one time. If you could, yeah, that's true. You get 5/5, 3/5/5s. We're already complaining about that with druids, right? So our potential beast druids coming up. So that would be pretty crazy for warriors to be able to do it too. Okay,
I don't want a good warrior deck. I think I'm done with them, dude.
I mean, I hate the thought of us feeling like, oh, warriors don't need anything else. Like, I don't think that's necessarily how you should, you know, the design should be approached. It's more like you need to add shit to the other classes, like priest. So what if warrior, I mean, we can only play one warrior class in all these tournaments anyways, which is something to be considered too. I feel like that format in itself, some people should experiment with possibly allowing folks to play multiple class decks, but you know, let a warrior do, you know, like if a warrior has a bunch of stuff, then that's fine. I mean, I think it's totally okay for people to figure that out, especially on ladder. People play all kinds of different warriors on ladder.
Yeah, I guess we could make like a priest card called like Protect the Queen, and it actually spawns like 0/0s that silence your hero.
Yeah, and draws cards.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, of course.
All right, so the next one I have here is Divine Paladin, and this is kind of similar to, so I haven't played any of the Divine stuff until like this week, just shit, even since Whispers of the Old Gods. So I just like, oh, I decided, okay, let's just do it. I haven't done it in a while, so let's just do it. And started building it just really similar to what I built old decks that were almost like flooding Paladin decks. And it's good. You know, it's just one of those decks that always, it's always dependent upon drawing Divine Favor or not. Yeah. You draw Divine Favor, you win. If you don't draw Divine Favor, you lose, you know, type of thing. But yeah. It's pretty fun. I mean, Morose is in this deck too, so obviously that was one of my motivations to doing it. And he's pretty good, man. If he's left unchecked, he's crazy good.
Yeah, I have to give you a list. I mean, you have to put it in the deck that already has a bunch of 1/1s by the time he comes out, so that they've already tried to expend a lot of their AoE.
Yeah.
But there was this guy, Dreamhack Montreal, which was like this completely crazy mess. Broadcast wise was a nightmare, but Luker was running a paladin list. It was like Secret Paladin actually, and it ran like the Divine Shield approach that you're running now, but with the Mysterious Challenger sprinkled in. So the same concept applied. Like Morose was good just because of redundancy. It's just more 1/1s, and eventually the opponent's out of answers, and you might
run them out of Ravaging Ghouls.
Yeah, that pretty much it. Like if Ravaging Ghoul wasn't in the meta, I think Morose would be pretty just playable in many more classes, but the ghoul and warrior being so good actually makes it almost unmanageable.
If you look at the best decks, there's Ravaging Ghoul and Swipe and Lightning Storm. So it's tough to play these one health things, but like you said, if you just run them out, if you just play so many of those effects, I want to say Morose, it kind of seems like not an aggro card, because like aggro, there's a lot of, you know, pressure and kill them before they draw it and all in and that kind of thing. Morose is more like a grind them out, play a, you know, if your deck can somehow use 1/1s over a long period of time in a control deck and you're just grinding them out, then maybe that's where Morose is at its best. But then it's hard to play a whole bunch of ways to draw out Ravaging Ghouls in that kind of deck. So it's a little bit of a weird card to use effectively.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It's definitely a fun deck to play. I mean, this deck is definitely closer to an actual deck that you could ladder some with. So I'd recommend trying it out and just learn some more ways to use things like the Divine, the Steward of Darkshire.
I want to see where this deck goes when you take like the Bilefiddle Tidehunter and probably the like the Inquisitor, the 1-mana 1/3 yeah. unless you get Murlocs. Mm-hmm. When you play that with the 3-mana 2/3 like the one gives you muster for dragons. I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Guy. That's gonna. Be awesome.
I love muster for dragons.
And you play some awesome. Dragons at the top end, obviously.
Yeah.
When you build that deck, like how maybe that's the kind of shell in which the whole Divine Shield approach might be able to evolve, but.
I think Muster for Dragons is probably just in a Dragon Paladin sure. deck of whatever variety, and I'm excited to play with that, but I think it's a couple weeks out.
Yeah,
I want to see Zubat being played in like the Bilefiddle Tidehunter Muster for Dragon. That's the dream. That's what I want. I want to see like this Paladin who's always going turn 5, get a Murloc from right. Hero Power, drop the Zubat, and have a Dragon Whelp. That's the dream.
Right.
He's got a Twilight Guardian from 4, obviously, right? So he's always got the double buff.
That's true. That's definitely true. Okay, so let's see. Actually, just to do a quick run through of what was in this deck again for the listeners. This one has Beast of Sergeant Squires. It's got one Competitive Spirit. It's got the selfless heroes and the Bilefin, both jugglers, Divine Favor, Moroz, Rallying Blade, and let's see, True Silver's Blessing of Kings, Concussion. It's Consecration. The text is really small on my CC Giant and Tyrion, as well as Jessicar, just for endgame.
Yeah.
So give that a try.
You could build this as a really grindy list if you went all in on Jessicar.
Yeah.
And Moroz as like your two win conditions.
Yeah.
Just shove.
Sometimes it's just. I mean, I have that CC Giant in there just because it's nice to get additional value from that particular strat too. And especially mid game too, because that giant can just doesn't necessarily kill people as just as much as it sometimes can just fight or just fight mid range decks and that sort of thing. So
can you actually Justicar Trueheart over the Murloc Hero Power, or would it?
It replaces a starting hero. It replaces like a basic hero power. So I don't think it would. Work.
Oh, it doesn't.
So you would never get like two Murlocs out of it. Yeah. That sucks.
I feel like Justicar should just. It's like what it does with Shadow Form and stuff. God, I wish it would actually improve it in some way. But
oh well, can't have it all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Noxious, you have a Nazoth Fork deck you wanted to talk about here. Let me bring
yes.
it up. Actually,
oh man,
this looks wild, man. All right, let me bring this up.
I built like two different lists for it. So this is kind of the standard list that I was running with at first. Do you have the second one?
Let me get the second one while I get it.
Yeah. So this is a typical Nazoth list. In that is basically running the double Huckster, one Loot Hoarder, Tomb Pillagers with Nazoth. Mm-hmm. Except I'm not running any Sylvanas or Cairns in the list. I didn't think that was relevant. Number one, I feel like nowadays both of these are just terrible. Like you drop them, you lost the game anyway. It doesn't matter. You're rogue. You've lost health. You can't recover board of the six drop. In the slower list, I can see room for Sylv or Cairn as you prefer. So the idea here is that you just play Deadly Fork on 3, replacing something like a Farseer or replacing some of that mid-game that you'd put with a double, Sylvanas and Cairn. And I'm also running double Infested Tauren since I realized, I want a Chill Maw, but I can't justify it. I'd like Taunts, and that kind of fills... Infested Tauren gives you the defensive potential as a 2-of that Farseers give you, except it's one turn later, and you replace the Farseer body with Deadly Fork. And when you combine Deadly Fork with Deadly Poison, you get a 5 damage weapon, which incidentally handles stuff like Emperor at the cost of health. And you can combine that with a bunch of leftover damage. And I found that was actually a lot better than I thought. Like, Deadly Fork is, like, you don't want it from Nazoth because it's a great card to get back. It's just a 3-2. And that's enough to push damage with Nazoth. You don't even need to get, Sylvanas, Cairn, Chill Maw. You just need stuff. If you get, 15 damage on board with Nazoth, you probably win. And when I look at Deadly Fork, I just see an extra body from that. So the idea is that it lets you get a really good turn 5. I was surprised at how functional the fork was. At any turn, it gives you the extra option every single time that you have it. Every single time, I found that you can make it work.
Okay.
When I look at Fork, I see it as a one-of-kind of card because I just don't ever want to draw two of that 3-2 weapon in a class that already has a hero power that makes a weapon.
Yeah.
I think the card's pretty powerful as more of a one of. I agree with what you're saying about not wanting Cairn and Sylvanas in an Azoth Rogue, because as you said, it's just kind of too slow. Mm-hmm. You need that early defense and you don't need that value. And Azoth Rogue actually already does a really good job of winning games that go long where you don't die, right? It doesn't need extra value. It needs to live, and Sylvanas and Karen just don't help with that. So I think Fork is like a really solid one of to just draw one of that weapon, and I think I like not playing the big heavy death rattles in an Azoth Rogue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely getting there, man. This Azoth Rogue is getting closer and closer, I think, to viability.
The second list I made, actually, the one on the right, is a lot greedier. So I put back Sylvanas. Yeah, right, I still want the early game. The idea here is that I play the one of Shadow Step to bring back Nuzoth after playing it against Control Deck.
Nuzoth Shadow Step is so busted against the Control Deck. They're screwed.
It's so good, man. It's so lost good many times one-off. To it, yeah.
Like, it is viable. Like, I have, you know, I know friends and friends of friends that have gotten to High Legend with Nuzoth Rogue. Like, it's not a bad, like, it's not my first choice for a tournament deck, but it beats the heck out of certain metagames.
Yeah.
Control. So that was the idea behind the card. I ended up cutting Deadly Poisons in that, you know, list on the right. Since Forks still give you like a free deadly
poison,
that's cool. And you don't need the emergency 3 damage as often against, you know, the earlier game weapons, and Ragnaros at the top end just because it's Rag. So often I find that the Nuzoth Rogue just performs just well across the board with Fork. Like, these awkward turns you used to have with Raptor. I'm sorry, but Raptor, as much as I want it to work in the Nuzoth Rogue,
I was just about to ask you about Raptor. Dude.
Like, I'm sorry, I've tried that card so much. And Nuzoth gave me hope, but I think it's actually trash. I've come to the conclusion that it's just strictly worse than Fork, unless you're against Control and you maybe get a Sylvanas reuse or something along those lines, or play a Shadowcaster list. Like, maybe if you play Shadowcaster, Raptor is better, but otherwise, like, I just don't see the card. I don't know, man.
It's a sad day. So it looked like such a good card.
I understand.
I had high hopes when I saw that Raptor. I was like, sweet, Death Rattle Rogue. This is going to be Spider Tank with upside. This could be really good. Yeah. And it's just disappointing.
Yeah.
What do you think about Shadowcaster in the Zoth? I feel like it's actually one of the better ways to build the deck, but it's
hard. I think Shadowcaster is a lot like Spider Tank Rogue card in that it's optimistic. It relies on having some kind of board stick. And that's a hard thing to do in Hearthstone. People like to kill your things, especially if you're rogue.
Yeah, rogue is the toughest. Maybe if they had more minions that actually spawn a token. You know, Death Rattle minions that have a token. But yeah, it's definitely tough. Shadowcaster.
Morose.
Yeah,
Morose. I mean, I really like the idea of like a rogue list with Shadowcaster and Twilight Summoner. Like, I think it's fine.
Okay.
You know, when you start playing like Shadowcaster, Summoner, Raptor in the same list. And you play like the Edwin fan, like
all kinds of different copyings, all the different types of copy.
Well, you don't need that much like copying effects. You really just need double Shadowcaster, and it's enough because you value people down. But it's just, I feel like you just don't have any card draw in that deck. Like, I like the version with double prep Gaddisand a lot more than the other Nuzoth list that I've seen that sometimes cut prep because there's so few quote unquote good spells. But then you just starve for cards.
Yes,
it feels bad, man.
I think when you're rogue, you really want to be trying to play a prep rogue. Prep's just one of those broken cards. It's not always that obvious, but
cards. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like kind of, if you're playing rogue, a big part of why is so that you can cheat with prep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about a few more decks that Zalay has brought, or maybe a couple more that Zalay brought here. Whoops, let me see.
Oh yeah, the Shaman list.
So we got the Evolve list. Oh, that's a lot of fun to play. And then
I played that Evolve Shaman on stream yesterday for a couple hours, and it did better than I expected. It's sort of it's not as all in on the Evolve mechanic as I've seen some other decks. It's more towards a mid range Shaman, and it actually performed like way better than I expected. I climbed from, I don't know, somewhere in Legend to top 50 Legend. And I was really impressed with the deck. I think a lot of it had to do with what I was queuing into. It was like the most C'Thun Warrior heavy metagame I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And so I just text their C'Thun and they couldn't Doomcaller it, and then I fatigued them, and that happened a lot of times.
Yep.
And then I was fatigued mentally and started playing two. But
you know, that's cool too. We won't hate you.
There's no spiders in this deck, dude. Come on.
Yeah, no,
man.
The spiders sucks. I'm sorry.
The spider, like, it was performing, but when Tuskar Totemic's your alternative, it's kind of hard to justify. Like, that's, I really tried to make that card work. I'm surprised you ended up just cutting it out completely.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was yelling at me to play Pantry Spider, and I was like, listen, I've played that card, I've read that card.
Yeah,
all of it is bad. I don't want it. Like, it is good to evolve Pantry Spider. I agree. But what about those times when you have Pantry Spider and not evolve, right? Because that happens.
It's only one, though.
The Master of Evolution's all, I love that guy. Yeah. He just, I mean,
yeah.
4 mana, 4/5 with upside. This deck's great at sticking a board. It's like so hard for them to keep your board clear all the time. And so you get to value trade and evolve pretty often.
Okay, so. Go ahead.
The dream is to double evolve a 6-drop because the 7-drops are kind of bad for evolve, but the 8-drops are so good. You get, you know, Tyrion, Ragnaros, other. Yep. I got, what was it? The mage one that gets 3 arcane missiles.
Ronin.
Yeah, that killed somebody. So if you can just double evolve one of those 6-drops, and we got a lot of cheap 6-drops in there, then that's just a very good time. Yeah. And one of the main issues with the decks that are built to be all in on the evolve mechanic is. If they ever fall behind, they just get wrecked, right? And it's pretty easy to fall behind against a deck like Dragon Warrior, where they have Alexstrasza Champion, Fiery War Axe, Blood to Ichor. It's like so hard to keep up on board. And if they ever pull ahead, they just value trade you into the dust. This deck has Lightning Storm and Maelstrom Portal, so you can actually catch up if things don't go perfectly for you in the early game.
Yeah, so that's the next question I was going to ask, is your thoughts on Maelstrom Portal, given that it's cheap, but I feel like it needs spell damage for it to actually have significant value versus just the one.
Well, not always. Explosion. Sometimes sometimes they just play Dude Living Roots and you're like, get wrecked, right? But yeah, it's way better with spell damage, as you're saying. It scales super well with spell damage. Honestly, that's something I want to talk about. I was more impressed with the spell damage AoE portion of the deck than the Evolve portion of the deck. Mm-hmm. Having played a little bit more with Evolve, I really don't like it. I think my initial instinct that it's kind of win more is correct. It's if you're playing against a control deck, sure, you get to build a big board, but once you evolve, then they use their Brawl or their AoE card and they clean it all up. Right. And if you're playing against a non-control deck, then they're probably fighting super hard for board, like Zoo or Aggro Shaman, and it's just hard to ever get a bunch of minions around to evolve. And if you ever do get a bunch of minions around to evolve, you probably would have won with any other card instead of evolve as well, right? Like, you're probably already winning that game. So it's just really hard to evolve sort of a win more card. It's like, it takes these spots where you have a big board that they can't deal with and makes it a bigger board that they can't deal with. It's actually not that valuable for upping your win percentage, but it does do super powerful, super fun things, and I could be misevaluating this. Like, it does, I've definitely had some really broken evolve turns where it just does crazy nonsense.
I think double evolve is kind of where you want to get the value. The issue is, like, sometimes you'd like to sprinkle in a Bloodlust in that list because that's what evolve does, kind of. If you have a board that's going to be good with evolve, well, you know, it's even better.
Might as well kill him.
But the one thing that I think is interesting about evolve that hasn't panned out is, like, I was expecting those. You know, like in a meta game where people trade and just have their stuff damaged, evolve is really good because you just heal it up and you just make it better on paper. But the problem is, like, the meta game nowadays is mostly just buff something up that's cheap and kill your shit. So you have a horse rider, like, you're smashing into your 4-health minion that you'd love to evolve after it's been, you know, it's going to be on 1 health for trading into something else next turn, but it never happens. You always lose your minions right away. And often nowadays, you get punished so hard for losing the board that people commit and go all in on doing exactly that. And when they don't commit to going all in on removing your board, then you're still killing, like, the Flame Tongue, and then there are smaller minions, and evolve is at that point a win more. So it would be good in a, like, a if Priest had evolve, I think this is the type of card that Priest could kind of use because. They would be happy to just have minions stick on board. They have high enough health that they're priest minions to be evolved afterwards, whereas most classes just lose their shit right away. Arcano Smith is, I think, one of the better cards for this list, though.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I was going to bring that one.
Arcano Smith with Flame Tongue is great. Yeah. That's a good time.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah, it's really, really good. What is the 0/5? Is it actually a 2 mana?
It's a 2, yeah.
Okay. All right, that's good. At least you can avoid the craziness. But 0/5, that's surprisingly effective. Not easy to get through, but does cost 4 mana, though, in the end. For those of you I can't see it again, that deck has Arcano Smith. It's got all the free element, all the free cards, too, that you get when you play this deck, like Things from Below and Nerubian Prophet, as well as Fire Elemental and Thunderbluff Valiant, just to kind of top it off. So, this is absolutely a fun deck. I've still been playing the Bog Champ from time to time, and Bog Champ's still really good right now every time I play it.
It works pretty well, It's hard to punish it.
Yeah, and that's heal, too, right? So heal's just, like, a big part of surviving these days. Okay, so the other deck that you brought here, Zalay, is, again, one of these abbreviated decks, just more conceptual, and it's a Yogg deck. So what are you looking at adding into this deck?
Right, so it's just that we're getting that Arcane Giant, I think it's called, tomorrow. Oh, yes. 12 mana, 8/8, gets one cheaper for every spell that you play. Yes. I think that's a big, important card. It plays well in these decks that play a bunch of spells and survive. So, you know, any Yogg deck, and the default best Yogg deck right now is Druid. So I took a Yogg Druid and trying to fit two Arcane Giants in there and make it make sense. So I cut some top end, like the Onyxia or the Cenarius, and one other card, and I tried to make it super spell heavy. So what you do is you just play the normal Yogg game plan where you play spells and survive and survive and survive, and then eventually you play Yogg, and then you play a 0 mana 8/8, and then they're kind of dead. And then one of the things I emphasize is we have two Ancient of War, because Ancient of War is really vulnerable to like effects like Execute, but so is your Arcane Giant. So you're trying to overload those types of removal. You're just trying to run them out of that stuff. Just too many big dumb idiots. They don't have enough spot removal for it all.
Yeah, I mean, Fandral and Violet Teacher occasionally also, you know, get those executes. So if you overload with the Ancients of War, you're 100% guaranteed to just have clean 8/8s on the board at stick, very often at least.
Can we just you know, go out there now and just say that that card is just going to be super good? Because
Arcane Giant?
Yeah.
I mean, it should be, right?
Yeah, I would be shocked. I'll go on record saying I will be shocked if that card is not super good. Super good meaning it'll be played at the competitive level to some extent, just because there's so many spell centric decks right now, and we see it in form of people just throwing Yogg in it, in some of these decks, and adding free 8/8s, I mean, that is just super good.
The synergy with Yogg is insane. I think if it weren't for Yogg, I'd be a lot less impressed by the card, but as is, it's like, whoa, it's... Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. It's probably going to see play in some competitive decks.
No, man. Lock and Load Hunter just sprinkles in Double Call the Wild with Double Giant.
It's just there like anything. It's like you could play it in it. And there's this whole Blood Warrior, you know, the whole warrior we're just going to have, like, you know, basically four giants in. And I mean, I just feel like this is an easy card to add to some decks that are already pretty hard, you know, pretty good already. And then we're talking about potentially 0 mana cards, right? So. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I think everybody is going to be playing that card, running that card tomorrow. And hopefully it's not going to be one of those, you know, degenerate cards. But it's exciting, though. I really like to see at least these crazy plays at the end of games, you know, just big plays versus, I don't know, just playing Yogg and that's it kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right. Any last comments on decks before we move on?
I mean, the Arcane Giant, you mentioned it briefly with Blood Warriors, is kind of an interesting concept. Yeah.
We talked about that with Raynad last time. I have the list.
Okay.
Like, I have a list already come up with, but I'm not convinced it's better than Worgen OTK ever is the problem.
Right, because like 8/8s come down and they don't defend you or kill your opponent or anything. It takes more time for you to win after you do your thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a two-turn kill, too. Versus just a single turn, because you don't have charge, right?
It's more than a full turn slower.
You could add charge.
Like Worgen straight kills him.
Right?
You could literally go giant, charge, faceless with one Emperor Tick on three cards. Like, that can work.
But is that as clean of a kill as Worgen?
Cards that is. Right, because the thing is, Worgen steals games, like, on turn six sometimes. Just like, oh, right. Worgen charge, double in a rage. You know, I've been able to curve, and somehow my Wildfire was hit face, my axe is set up, I win.
Yeah, whereas, more scenarios.
You know, this is literally a turn 10, 30 damage, which is really limited against any warrior archetype, so, yeah.
Yeah, good point. All right, well, why don't we move on here and talk a little bit about the Hearthstone Championship Tour. All right, well, why don't we move on here and talk a little bit about the Hearthstone Championship Tour. So the European prelims happened this past week, and Zalei, you just mentioned that you're going to be playing in the NA prelims this coming weekend. So let's talk about how the EU one went. Anything that really stood out to you guys? I mean, we didn't see any of the new cards, which was a big bummer, at least from my standpoint.
They weren't allowed.
Yeah,
for the NA prelims, the first week is allowed.
Okay, the first week is allowed. Okay, so this week will be a lot more interesting. We'll see.
I mean, I guess some portal, maybe some Macro Shaman list. I know some people were running it recently. So
yeah, but I don't know. Anything worth mentioning, like with what you guys saw at the EU prelims?
lots of all-ins on questionable, can I top deck this? Right. A lot.
Yeah, there was a lot of commentary on just the play, right? Like, a lot of people were questioning some of the plays, and but these are some of the best players that we have in Hearthstone, so I'm always really reluctant on questioning them.
I mean, dude, like, the decks, the metagame is very volatile. Like, Zeus Shaman, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen playing those decks. It's when the field's so, like, stacked with players who have way above average, the best don't always win. Like, those decks are pretty volatile.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the tournament was pretty disappointing. Just the timing of it was so poor. If they had just timed, if they'd somehow managed to plan it out so that, you know, this big tournament that Blizzard's spending a bunch of money on to promote their game also promoted the new set, I think it'd be better for everyone. Like, don't viewers want to see us playing with the new cards? Don't players want to play with the new cards? Doesn't Blizzard benefit from spending this money promoting a tournament that promotes their new cards instead of a format we've been seeing for months already? So I was just really disappointed with the tournament.
I was going to say, like, a comment on that. Like, I think the reason they did that was just to protect integrity of the people that are in, you know, that got into the prelims, and just given that, I don't know, there's like a day of it coming out. I mean, I'm just being devil's advocate here, because I agree with you too. Like, I wish I would have seen all the new ones, but I can't think of any other reason why they wouldn't do it, right? Like, so that's about the
only thing. It was like a planning ahead thing. Like, they have to pick the dates far in advance, and then maybe they didn't finish Karazhan as soon as they wanted to put it out.
Okay, so you think the release was just not...
I don't know what their reasoning is. I think it was just such a bad decision. It's hard for me to understand.
Well, deck submissions as well. Like, sometimes that's one of those things that's kind of difficult for players. Is if you want to submit your decks like really early, then does everybody get a last chance? And what about those guys that already dedicated time to deck building, that they happen to not be able to revisit those submissions? Blah blah blah. So
it's kind of
clean. For them to allow at least a first swing for the NA prelims, I can understand the reasoning behind the EU ones. It's just the timing of the release is so poor for that.
I mean, it's the day before, like, literally, right? Yeah. Like, so
I think day before is exciting. It's like, all right, let's see how good you are at evaluating these cards.
Done that before, right? Like,
it could be scary if there is like changed. A card that's ridiculously good, and only like a couple players figure it out. I don't know. Is that what we want?
I think that's a cool kind of skill test as compared to currently, which is like, well, we've played with these for months. We all know what we're doing. Let's, you know,
let's see who
high rolls this curve better. Duskite Totem, get a Totem Golem. Gotcha. I don't know. I'd like to see who can figure out what the best new deck is on very little time in practice. I'm going to tell you,
when Barnes gets released, Priest is the best because they Shadow Madness your shit. And you want to literally gouge your eyes out. And they get good Onyx Bishop and Resurrect out of their barns. And
That's how the dream happens. Shadow Madness gets actual value.
Oh, God. Yes. Who am I kidding?
Yes.
Shadow Madness is a good card. I actually liked that card last time I was playing Priest. I didn't Priest, but Shadow Madness seemed good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it's good for kind of the same reason Shadow or Pain is good, right? There's just so many targets for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So many targets at 3 or less attack, which... Got that new dragon coming up, not this week, but soon enough in a couple weeks.
Which dragon?
It's a 6-mana 3/6 battle cry. If you have a dragon in hand, it destroys a minion with 3 or less attack. Ew, so it's
you like that card?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited because, first of all, I like dragon decks. I'm a bit of a Kibler fanboy in that respect, I guess. So it's sort of like 4 mana for a 3/6 and 2 mana for a Shadowward Pain.
I think it's insane.
One of the big things about this card is it's a dragon itself. And that's always a struggle when you're building dragon decks, right? You need something that says dragon at the bottom of the card. And there's so few options that are like playable. It sucks. Right.
That's true, too. Yeah.
And like you try and build Control Dragon Warrior and they're like, no, these just aren't playable. I can't play these cards in my deck. I can't. And so this gives you one more card that says dragon and I think is playable, and also for Control Priest. And, you know, casting Shadow Pain is a really powerful effect, is the point I was making. So Bookworm, I'm a little bit hyped. I don't think it's the strongest card, but it could enable a bunch of cool dragon decks. And also Paladin in particular, it's at its best with, because the Shadow Pain goes well with Aldor Peacekeeper and Keeper of Ultimate.
Oh, yeah, maybe there is a combo ability with that. That's true.
Yeah.
I really think Bookworm is, like, when it initially was spoiled, which I think it was one of the first few ones, one of my big fears is that it would actually smother a lot of the, like, if Shadowward Pain and Shadow Madness and Cabal Shadow Priest didn't smother, like, low attack minions, I think that's one that could do it, because you can combine it with every single class. I mean, Humility and Pally is, like, if you happen to play like Consort on 5 and you get a like a cheaper Bookworm and you have Humility plus leftover mana, I mean, what the fuck? It is really tough to handle. If you think Kodo's bad, if you think Humility Kodo's bad, that one is really good.
It's another. It's basically another Kodo. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but it's much better than a Kodo because it enables your Templar, which is suddenly a card you want to play. That card seemed insane to me, the Bookworm, but maybe it's not as good as I expect. Who knows?
I'm not as high on it, but definitely those plays that you're talking about are going to be definitely solid for something like a Control Pally. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see that. We'll have to come back in like a couple weeks or a few weeks and talk about that card.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see. Yeah, well, anyways, good luck this week at NA Prelims.
Thanks.
I'm excited to see what you bring here. Brings value to Undex to it.
Zoo, that would be hilarious. Shaman,
Warrior, Druid. Yes, that's amazing. What I'm bringing. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But there's a Maelstrom portal, right? Is that what you mentioned?
No, I've got zero new cards in my lineup. It's sad.
Okay, I love you anyway.
Hopefully somebody with sweet new decks just crushes me. Yes, I'm playing EU prelims.
Oh my gosh. All right.
I'm so sorry.
It's all good. All right, let's do some Mechatorp workshop here. All right, so those of you not familiar with Mechatorp, this is it's become a regular segment that we do where we come up with some new cards. We use hearthcards.net, and we just put together some cards and talk about it. So I think Noxious and I came up with one that actually has a few pieces to it, and Noxious has two of them. So why don't we bring up mine first? And this one's very, very conceptual, guys. So it's not something that like we could add to the game right this second, but I think it's always good, just good to have concepts. And anyway, so this is called it's called Totem of Magic, and obvious shaman card, totem, right? Of course. And it's a 2/2 body. Discover a totem of resistance, and the totem of resistance are down below. And so we got fire, water, and lightning. And the whole point of this is to really reduce damage from spells or even just attacks, like, I don't know, a fire elemental or whatnot. So of course, the game is not built for this yet. You know, there is no concept of fire damage and water damage and lightning damage. But I think it would be a cool thing if we did. We touched a little bit on just like mages having maybe an arcane line and a water line and a fire line type of just having those type of builds. And it kind of just got me thinking that we should just go the next step with just the cards themselves too, and just giving them the ability. It doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be stated on the cards. Maybe it's just something that, I don't know, we just kind of know innately that.
No, lightning. You wouldn't know it.
You put an icon.
I've gone.
You put an icon. There you go.
This.
You put an icon.
You have a little picture of a water or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to literally have a Pokemon symbol on your stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
This. This is a cool idea.
Yeah.
They have this kind of stuff in World of Warcraft. Why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, given the fact that you can discover one, it allows you to be able to play this in multiple matchups too. So obviously, you'd want to do lightning against shaman. You'd want to do, water against.
A few tech against freeze mage.
Yeah, exactly, right.
That's the thing, though, is like, it's you have to go to do so much, because if you want to be true to WoW, then suddenly you just, like, lightning and water are the exact, they're like nature damage.
Oh, is it? Okay.
If you look, but like, what I mean is, if you want to go like the WoW way, you have to bundle together a lot of stuff that looks different in our experience. And if you want to go ice damage, you know, that's another thing. Like, frost damage is actually a thing. So you'd be able to bundle those together. The only thing is the game's not built for it. I would love, and I've already theorcrafted stuff like this before. Like, I've thought about having like spells have tags, but the depth you add to the game, I mean, rather not even the depth, the complexity that you add with this is something Blizzard just hasn't been comfortable with ever. Because the problem is, you suddenly, every single spell has this extra label on it, and it interacts with a dozen, you know, a good 100 other things that also refer to different labels. I'm fine with Frostbolt, you know, interacting with your totem, or with something like Ice Lance. You know, Ice Lance and Frostbolt are kind of that kind of synergy you're talking about, which is effect, you know, freezing or frost, and interact with it. This is very broad, because you're not even interacting directly with a freeze, which is visible and visually understandable by players, but it's really just the type of the spell. So you have to learn all the types, their icons. Right, you have to learn the icons, and there could be a good like a really huge amount of those if you went deep in the theme. So I love the idea.
Of course. I mean, it requires obviously design work from the standpoint of the existing game itself. But, yeah. You know, again, this is what we do in Mechator, is just throw out concepts and throw out, you know, just new cards too. So I figured I'd throw that out. Zalei, any comments?
No, I mean, I think it'd be kind of cool. It's super hard to implement.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could
like everything, right?
We could probably implement something that's just 50 reduce just damage from spells by 50% or something like that.
There you go. That's easy.
I think it's like if you label spells with elements, that's easier. Because if you start having to do that with minions, then you're never done. Mm-hmm. But if you literally just reduce the damage that spells do, you could literally label every damage spell with a certain effect, like physical damage, lightning, whatever it is. Like that can be done, I think, more than minions. Like minions have so much going on.
Right.
Or how about just inverse spell damage? Just like your opponent has minor, like their spells just deal one less damage.
Yeah, I would love that. That'd be cool.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
That'd definitely be cool. Yeah, more totems, please, man. Definitely.
Okay. Totems that don't roar when they come on the board from Tuskar to Tether.
Yes,
like something. A heart attack. Exactly. If I hear like, did you bring some fish? I'm just like gonna flip a fucking table. That sound, like the sequence of these sounds together, just
it's not good.
It's the scariest thing.
Rage.
Doesn't make any
like sometimes
sense
I alt-tab at a Hearthstone and I hear that in the background. I just alt-F4 the app without even looking at it.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's talk about one of your cards here, which is Crippling Poison. Let me turn these off here.
Yeah, I like the idea of discovering like three set things as well, which I think is
Gives it flexibility instead of, you know, having it only be good for these matchups and not the other.
Yeah.
Okay, so Crippling Poison. This is a one mana spell. Give your weapon +1 attack and your hero is immune while attacking.
Smart. Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is that you can actually trade into minions without dying.
That's good.
So you literally buff your weapon by less than deadly. So you can only kill, you know, 2 health minions or 3 twos, but you often overkill with deadly. So I thought this has its room. You can't kill something like Trog with it. You can stack it with deadly, which suddenly means that you end up with a really big weapon. You're encouraged to play Assassin's Blade because suddenly you don't die on the back of having a high durability weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea really just is give rogues a way to not die when they're removing stuff with their weapons, and maybe then that can be used as a tempo tool that also bundles in survivability, which I think you can't give rogues just a healing tool, as it wouldn't be enough. You have to give them, because it takes a card slot that they often can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
And when you
bundle rogue healing is removal, off-theme.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Like you have to have a way for them to mitigate damage without it being pure healing. I think this is cool.
I like it. It's cool. Yeah.
Where did you find that artwork, man? That looks cool, dude. I had the hardest.
Found in the WoW TCG art. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
What if we're like -1 attack, but you also draw a card?
So like you just you're immune.
It's not good on a neutral dagger, but if you have some kind of weapon.
Sure, I'm cool with that. Honestly, like the idea I had initially was immune while attacking cycle, but I thought a one mana cycle in rogue is kind of a sketchy.
Dangerous,
thing.
Yeah.
It's hard. It was hard to say. I'm just kind of. Because you might just run it, not even for the effect, right? Just for the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think it's scarier in Rogue than it is in Priest. So
it's for sure.
You could have made Purify 1, but I don't think you can make Crippling 1 mana with a draw.
No, you're right.
Okay, so he's got one more card. So before we get to the next card, I did want to give a shout out to some of the folks that listen to Value Town on iTunes for leaving a 5-star rating. Little Dad Hands. It's a cool name. And Mr. Samoz, thanks for the 5-star ratings. It really helps the show a lot. And if you guys, anybody out there too that listens and wants to help out Value Town, be sure to go and leave a rating. 5-star rating, preferably. That'd be great. And it just helps with people discovering Value Town on the iTunes podcast store. Okay, and moving on to the next one, Mass Hysteria. Okay, so this one is... Let me bring it up.
It's a priest card.
Yes,
it's actually...
Not like there hasn't been enough priest cards recently.
Yeah, but this one is probably... I've never really seen anyone make something like this, and I came up with it because I was thinking about a way to make priests not come down to playing for tempo. You know how you have, like, the... They want us to play, you know, Priest of the Feast, a 3-drop and a 2-drop. This is a 2-cost spell, or you choose a minion, and all minions of the same type now cost 1 more to play. So if you target a beast, all beasts for the duration of the game are going to cost 1 more. If you target a Murloc, Murlocs will cost 1 more. If you target, so what totems,
does it show you though?
Blah, blah, blah.
Does it show you like a list of different types?
No, no, no. You have to target something. I mean, you play it against a beast deck, you'd be doing that. If you could play preemptively, it might be too broken. That's the problem I had with it. Is, you know,
if you just name something,
right? If you just name a certain, you know, type of tribe, I think that might be like a bit too good because you played preemptively, and priest is more about being reactive. But what it does is, if you're playing off against beast druid or hunter, which I suspect will gain a ton from the expansion, this is the type of stuff that as priest you can use to slow them down and maybe buy yourself
that is enough time to super get disruptive. Oh my god,
it is. I think I don't think it has the desired effect. I think if you want the game to not be about tempo, I think you need AoE so that people aren't incentivized to just jam everything out as fast as they can all the time. And I think, I think what this does is it's just like a hoser for tribal decks kind of thing. It's just like if they're playing a tribal deck, they get wrecked by this. And if they're not playing a tribal deck, this is a piece of garbage. Yep. And so, I don't know.
It's very polarized. That's, when I made the card, it was initially, like, I didn't even think it was that good. It's just one additional way for, because I expect beast decks, like demons and zoo can just get fucking wrecked by this. It really sucks. Your Voidwalker's one. Your imp is going to be one. Any flame imp. The Malchadar's Imp, Doomguard, everything gets thrown completely off curve. Imp Gang Boss becomes three. Negate demons and beasts super positively with this. It just becomes really bad against other metagames where it just does nothing. So it's really just a matter of targeting Zoo, targeting Druid, targeting Hunter. That's mostly what they do.
Yeah, it's basically a more selective but powerful mana wraith, right? And I do like that. I like the concept of slowing people down in that way, or just disrupting a deck and having that be essentially a way of countering instead of just having, you know, just the archetypes just not match up. You know, you actually have specific cards that actually ruin other
decks. I mean, anything can happen becomes slightly clunkier. Dragon decks become a bit worse. I mean, I don't know if I'd be happy to play Imp Gang Boss for 4 mana against a priest who has Shadow Madness lurking, or, you know, Cabal Shadow Priest later on. It's just really clunky to throw, you know, Voidwalker for 2 mana mid game. It's just bad. It's just bad.
Okay. So. Cool. Good stuff. And I think that's it for the Mechatorps. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. And I think in the future, guys, we'll have some of maybe the, you know, patrons or maybe the subs for Rallytown, you know, submit some too. Because I know a lot of you guys, of you guys tweet like new cards and things like that. And it'd be a good way for you guys to participate too, just on the segment. It's becoming a regular segment, so that's kind of why I'm saying it. But we have a Q&A next, guys. For those of you that want to ask your questions, go ahead and tweet me at ChamionV, and I'll try to get some out here. So it looks like Ventor has a question. Is Arcane Golem plus Cloaked Huntress good enough for a new secret hunter archetype?
Arcane Giant?
Arcane Golem. Yeah. Arcane Giant plus Cloaked Huntress. Is that good for a secret hunter archetype?
Maybe. It's worth testing, right? Like, Yogg Hunter was a thing that was kind of like better than you would expect before. And those two cards might both fit in the deck, and they might play well together. So I think it's definitely worth looking into and testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would have to be like back to the control archetype, right? Because the one we saw at Firebat that was hyper-aggressive, the issue with that deck is you just don't have anything that gets hard removed very often. So the Giants would be the only targets of, you know, hard removal. So what would happen is you'd have to have at least Call of the Wild and possibly even Hymanes in the list, which is fine. It's totally fine to build it like that.
I think it's best that way, yeah.
Then you get Elec value, which is sick.
Right. Exactly. Right. You always find something out of your Elec. So I really like the concept of just Giant in that Yogg deck, or that Lock and Load deck. But it's kind of hard to slot everything in.
Tight. You know, like Zalay was saying earlier, having all those secrets in, it's so disruptive in those early turns. And a lot of times for Hunter, it's just a matter of getting to Call of the Wild. You know, before it was like, you know, high main leading into whatever was it, right? Now it's just like, if you can just get to the Call of the Wild turns, then you've got a good shot at just winning no matter who you're playing against, or what you're playing against. And throwing on top of that an extra 2 Giants somewhere in there, I think that's pretty good. Definitely pretty good. Okay, let's see if there's anybody in Twitch chat too. If you guys have a question, you know, definitely ask it. So Ohio Rush Baby asks, this is kind of a no-brainer, but I'm just going to read it anyways. Is it Blizzard's ultimate responsibility to balance classes in Hearthstone? And if so, how? I mean, I guess the first question is, do they have to balance Priest? I'll just put it in terms of Priest. Is it okay for Hearthstone?
I think they've come to the conclusion, no.
Yeah, but...
I don't think they want to balance it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
I think they're afraid of what, like, can you imagine having this casual fun game to play on the fly quick games with? If Freeze becomes dominant and every single game you play is against this absolutely smothering class that never lets you win or doesn't win before turn 13, like, it's just that's probably the reason why they're building it the way they are. Until they give Freeze like an aggro list, they won't be happy just making it good.
Yeah, I think they've kind of painted themselves into a corner where they've given Priest identity of doing stuff that is not fun to play against, and they want Hearthstone to be fun to play, so they're making Priest bad so that people don't play against a deck that's not fun to play against.
Okay, so next question is this a good thing?
Well, I mean, I think that kind of dodges the big question, the overarching point, which is it like Hearthstone's responsibility to balance classes? Because it's not even that they didn't balance Priest. Is that if they want to make Priest as good as the other classes, I mean, they can do that, and it can have a playstyle that's a lot more aggressive, right? I'm not against them making Priest worse, like the control priest archetype worse. Cool. Yeah, I love the Shadow Bomber archetype. I don't mind like slow control priests being worse than Control Warrior, for instance. But
if we take a step back though, and we're talking about just really Priest, if you look at Hearthstone just like the overall scope of it, Priest is extremely good in Wild. Like the Nazoth Priest has always been one of the best. Like ever since Wild came out, Nazoth Priest has been like one of the best.
It is the best decks. Right now,
and I mean, I've had firesides that have been won by Priest decks basically. And so from the, you know, like the whole scope, like Priest is actually probably like is fine. Actually, you know, it's being played, and I think it is powerful in some regards. It's just in Standard, particularly in the competitive side of things, whether it's, you know, necessary to do it. For me, honestly, like I feel like they should. Like I don't think you should make content that's supposed to be equal with the other aspects of your game, and not have them in some capacity, you know, relevant to your game. You know, like if you wanted funsies, I mean, they have Tavern Brawl for funsies. You know, you have elements of your game that are supposed to be meant for that. But if you're a designer, I think it's just. I hate to put it this way, but I think it's just incorrect and in some ways lazy for you not to even try to fix it. You know, like redesign it. I think we'd be okay if you redesign Priest. Like I'd be okay with that. Actually,
I want to see Choose One being given. Like I don't know.
Sure,
has any
give
of
them
you
a Choose
tried
One.
The new Tavern Brawl?
Like
did
that.
Any of you try?
Tavern Brawl. No, I was gonna play it actually.
Okay,
here's
the thing. There's a mechanic in this Tavern Brawl, which is. Interesting, because Priest at some point, there's a card they have which lets them choose between Shadow and Light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were talking last week about it would be cool if Priest's identity was to either be healing or Shadow. You know, you get to pick a side.
Right. No, I think that was a good idea.
Instead of it being Druid with a choose one, blah, blah, blah. So it's not versatility. It's really just like a very strong Twilight effect, right, between in the same class. Like the evil Anduin and the good Anduin in the same class. And they've developed that in their Tavern Brawl. I don't know if that's the way they're going with the class, but it would be good because that actually allows you to diversify the stuff that you make with the class instead of having to release one card for one specific archetype, but you know Priest can abuse it in certain decks, and then it becomes like control Priest being good is probably one of the worst nightmares of everyone. They don't realize it, but it's really, really feel bad, and it's also
God. I would love that.
Dude, sure, you'd farm the.
I would make you feel so bad.
Yeah, but imagine a world where like they have Entomb and they get another control tool that's good against you. It's toxic. So I don't know, man. It's one of those cases I think with Priest where going to the Twilight Zone is good, and they could do that. So yeah, I'm okay with them not making every single card relevant that they print. It sucks. But, you know,
it's not about that. It's just about just making the class relevant, you know, we talked a little bit about it last week, just with the video. It was very apparent that, you know, their release for this set had more to do with Priest just being, you know, a more casual class, you know, and just pulling off silences on statues and things like that. You know,
Harold
it's
Velage,
like, that's cool. You know, like
I'm
cool with that. You know, we see some of those cards with other classes too, but, you know, the whole thing is it's just, you know, priests have nice card. You know, a Priest of the Feast is a nice card too. It's just, you know, we're just far from it being like a deck or a class that somebody plays in a high level. And I think it, would it be difficult to do? Yeah, I think it would be difficult to like redesign it or you know, add something major or take out something major. It might have to be something like taking out something major and replacing it. Like maybe take out the whole steel element of the priest,
like,
right?
The only thing
and
they
just
have
replace
to do...
it with something unique to priests. There's nothing about priests right now that's that unique. Because, you know, rogues steal stuff too from the other class. You know, they don't steal other people's cards or copy them, but they steal something in a similar vein. So priest, you know, even healing, paladin heals, it doesn't have like a very, you know, just something that's, it doesn't have an identity or an element or a mechanic that defines its identity.
Like, here's the issue with giving priests healing. It's Akenai, it's obvious. In the alpha and beta, they had to change greater heal from being deal 2 damage. For 2 based on your hand size. Like, each card is 2 health. And you could target the enemy hero, yada, yada. So what they did is they added these versatile heals that could heal you or your minions. And incidentally, they allowed you to target enemy characters with those, as opposed to you only being able to heal friendly targets. So unless they make cards that literally heal your hero, you know, think Reno style, think Twilight Darkmender that only restores health to yourself. Like, you can't Twilight Darkmender the enemy face with an Akenai on board. You just can't. It'll automatically target you.
Right.
So they would have to push the self-healing as opposed to the target healing, or simply cut out Akenai and make the shadow literally a shadow theme. Like, Shadow Form is a standalone shadow card. Like, you don't turn your healing into shadow. It's just you're straight up dealing shadow damage,
right?
Like an evil priest. But right now what they've got is this Anduin that can do both at the same time at the cost of card slots, and, you know, hop between both styles, which I think is kind of tough to balance.
Well, I think the problem is, like, that you're stating there is just that Anduin is a light. I mean, he's a light priest or a holy priest or whatnot, like, by default.
Sure.
And then you have to change that with a card, where it'd be nice if you could spec a shadow priest right from the get-go, and, you know, be able to do that with the versatility in the cards. And that's why I think, you know, your idea there is actually really, really good. Like, every single heal card should have the ability to, you know, like, it's like almost a choose one, right? You choose damage or you choose heal. Like, it gives the flexibility in that regard, and Blizzard would allow for that. So I don't know. I mean, we've had priest has just been a huge topic, you know, just for the last 3 or 4 weeks or whatnot. And I think everybody's kind of talked ad nauseum about it. So kind of leave it there for now. But I would like them to take more risks with priests. That's all I'm saying. Just take more risks.
Sure.
I think we'd be fine. I think the casual players would be fine too. Like, if you took more risks with it. And it would
do something.
Yeah, it would mean a lot if they just, you know, change something. Just like, it's
priest
okay.
of the fist.
It's okay if you made a mistake and you want to change something. It's really okay.
I mean, the thing is, you know, Shadow Fiend actually got me hopeful that they knew what they were doing with priest.
Yeah, actually, that card.
I saw that card in the Grand Tournament, I was like, all right, dude, they want us to play a Velen combo, or they want us to be like a Mind Blast combo deck. They fucking figured it out, and they're going to be supporting that archetype for a long time. Never fucking mind, dude. Like, just supporting that art, that playstyle just didn't sit with them. I'm also not sure why Shadow Form is 3. Like, I feel like at 2 mana, it's already bad. Like, I don't know about 3 mana.
Shadow Priest is such a cool idea, right? It takes Priest, moves in a new, interesting direction. It's more in line with the rest of Hearthstone. Shadow Forms, Shadow Priest. It's a natural direction to move Priest.
Yeah.
I like it.
Vetrix 2451 in chat actually asks an interesting question about Witch Doctor. Is the Witch Doctor kind of a confession for Tuskar being a mistake?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah. It summons a basic totem.
Oh, it's literally right.
Blizzard literally
okay,
knows
I see what you mean.
That
yes.
Tuskar Totemic is a joke. But...
Well, Tuskar Totemic was a mistake, and but it is true.
It is a confession, right? Like, they know it.
They know it. I don't think, like, if you look at the logics of it, it doesn't necessarily have to be the case that is how things are. Like,
yeah, but
they definitely made it this way because they're like, oh, this Tuskar is too good. We need to fix this. They did do that.
But again, if Tuskar's a mistake, just change Tuskar.
You know, no, you can't do that, dude. What if someone like actually crafted a common or found an attack? You might just fucking confuse them to death.
Just give them full.
Like, are you insane? Are you the Chan man? Have you ever game-designed in your life, like changing a common card in a four-edition old set? God. Are you fucking?
You need to calm down, sir.
Yeah, you might need to. Wow,
I escort you out of the building, sir.
I'm done.
All right, Jitty asks, thoughts on the resurgence of any Fen Azoth Pally due to Ivory Knight? Is there any merit in a combo of the two cores? Can you combine?
There has to be some merit, right? Because Zixo played it at prelims, and he's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah, he is. He definitely is.
I played some Ivory Knight, and I got to say, I was not impressed. He was about as bad as I thought. I thought those Paladin spells were pretty terrible.
Really?
Like,
I thought it was.
Yeah, anything that says Discover is really easy to underestimate, right? 6-mana, 4/4, heal a little bit, Discover. Like, these are all good things, but it also gives away information. And man, there's a lot of really bad Paladin spells. So,
lots of one mana spells.
It could be anything from like Humility all the way up to the like, which is
blessings.
Awesome. Yeah. All the like crappy competitive spirit. Like, I had one be like Divine Strength, Eye for an Eye, and Hand of Protection. And I was just like, okay, you know, this, even in the deck where it's the best at, it still just completely sucked.
Yeah.
But I think like the occasional Enter the Colosseum. Psalm Vigil is like,
even the fact that they see the heal amount is like a big deal. Like, they get a good idea of what you're drawing. They can use that information.
That's true.
Like, that might be an equality, right?
Right.
If you snap pick it, they know it's an equality. If you don't snap pick it, they're like, this, like the discovery cards, you know, the Light and Darkness.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Holy Light, like some janky. Choice you have to make. So
yeah, but at the same time, they do get a lot of information, but it is an extra card in your deck, so I mean, they already know your deck. So normally there's nothing secret. There's still at least an element of surprise, even if it is limited to like only 4 or 5 cards. But yeah,
getting the third or fourth anything, that feels pretty good.
That is
against the control deck.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, good luck, control warrior.
Health, right,
if you're 30 health, you can actually not show. It's the
you just gotta waste the heal so they don't get information.
If you're like 28, I'd say 27 is probably an okay moment to start, because most of your spells, like half of them, will be like higher. It's like 27 health, you'll be good to go.
But yeah, any Fen and Azoth, it looked pretty good this past weekend, you know, like when they were running it. So I think you'll see a little bit more of it, maybe even this weekend. You gonna be running any kind of pally?
Who knows? I know it was very popular at DreamHack Montreal.
Yeah.
Which, again, doesn't represent much because it was an open tournament. But the idea is that people tried it out quite a bit. But, you know, I like the idea of Ivory Knight. It's just that when I look at this card and I look at, like, Challenger, I wonder if the same dude designed both. Because it's like, one is just purely sick in stats. The other one's just might work, might not. Who fucking knows? And I feel like Ivory Knight could have discovered a spell from your deck instead. So you're limiting the range of bullshit that you're gonna land. And then actually, you might make, you know, some.
If that discovered a spell from your deck, it'd be so good.
Yeah, it would be really good. Yeah, like, you could actually tweak it down to a 3.
Oh my god, would that be a strong card?
The idea is you actually bring back a heal bot for paladins, and they get a new archetype. It's just, I feel like that would make it just.
That would have been better.
You wouldn't go for Forbidden Healing. You're probably not super happy about it, but in some, when you're safe, it might be okay. It's just one of those things that
you can control it, though.
I love the mechanic of the discovery, but I also at the same time wish it weren't so.
Yeah,
I think discovering a card from your deck is like a super dangerous mechanic.
It's disgustingly powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Last question. Lots of other questions, but unfortunately, we don't. Running out of time here. Bado HSS, is Blizzard trying to force Discard Warlock into existence to shake up the staple of Zoo?
Yes.
It's an impossible task, though.
Is it? No, I think Zoo could very easily be just discard after 4 weeks, yeah. I think that could be the staples.
VM comes in, it just comes in as like the I think it becomes a standard list because Peddler makes up for
like, Imp is for sure in standard, right?
Be in standard.
Yeah. And then does Silverware Golem make it in there too? I don't know how much more stuff makes it in, but it seems like you're definitely playing like Imp and Doomguard and
yeah, you're playing those. Frostfire. I guess a staple meaning.
And then once you're that far, maybe Silverware Golem's in there, and like I don't know.
And then Fist of Taraxis, and then suck your.
Nah.
I mean, I don't know about this. I'm gonna try that, but I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
But the general idea is just Doomguard being already played in that deck is just good. That's the thing. Like we look at Doomguard and we don't see a discard Warlock card, but it is.
It totally is.
It happens. I've coined Doomguard.
It's good. Discard two Silverware Golems. I got a nice little tweet about
that.
That's
disgusting, bro.
It's like, literally game over.
Dude got smashed. Yeah. Didn't have roll and he died.
That's kind of the problem with the discard Warlock is Doomguard's really, really good, so you're not changing shit about that being included in Zoo.
Yep.
And Soulfire's still okay, and it's still good, so you're really not changing that much. So all you're giving them is the ability to sometimes make those awkward turns better. Plus, you also give them another one mana demon, 1/3. Like, you almost couldn't make a better card for their discard mechanics. It's really well implemented.
Speaking of which, that guy's not just for discard mechanics. He's also for demons because of how he curves into that two mana card that either deals 2 damage to an enemy minion or gives +2/+2 to a friendly demon. Right. Yeah, Demon Fire is how it's called. Yeah, so now you have Flame Imp and Voidwalker and this other 3 on turn 1. Play one of those guys on turn 1, they play some dude, you give it your guy +2/+2 and value trade into their guy. It's actually a very strong play.
Yeah.
So going from 4 1 mana demons to 6 is a big deal because of demon
you put 8 1 drop demons, so you put the blood imps back in because you can and you smash double demon fuse, double demon fire, double wrath guard and you just curve like your highest card is Imp Gang Boss. Or maybe Doomguard. Let's go with Doomguard.
We'll probably go with Doomguard.
Yeah, like, the idea is like you're playing literally all the jank, and you're smashing double Demon Fuse, double Demon Fire. The fact that
Demon Fuse
does it, dude. Who cares, right? Who cares?
Me. I care.
Put in even Felguard to just make it even worse, right?
Oh yeah, just troll ourselves.
Who can click on
nice
life tap
deck,
the most?
Submission right there.
We'll see what the record for life taps are.
Demon Fire is really good on Imp Gang Boss too, like because you get more value trades, more ones.
Yeah, it's really sick.
Yeah. So yeah,
I don't know, man. Demon Fire is good.
Yeah, I guess we are gonna be seeing those things kind of integrated into Zoo. But it's gonna make Zoo even more powerful, which is.
Yeah,
kind of
that's
scary. Yeah, Zeus.
I hope Silverware Golem is consensus bad after the month because it feels bad RNG like Barnes. Yep. It's just not. So please no.
I hate it. I hate that.
I'm excited to play with it in a month, but I'm terrified of playing with it in 3 months. Put it that way.
Yeah.
Right. I want to do this for like a week. And then not again.
Be like, it's just Draxus again. I mean, the day that they give us, say, 6 cards like Fist of Draxus and Silverware and another one that gets put in, when that happens, suddenly I think Discard Warlock would like all the jank, the discard stuff is suddenly something you might want to put in because then the amount of redundancy you've got on like awkward hands, just discard everything, still win.
Yeah.
Because. Really consistent.
I'm scared that we're there. I think we might be. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna try it out.
Sense Demons is a card that I wish was more played. One card as well that we just haven't seen in like at all is Dark Bargain. You know, nobody really thinks of this card
Bargain. Oh no.
No, but you kill 2 things, you discard 2 if all you've
got. But for them to have 2 things, either they're playing 2 things in 1 turn.
That's a little much,
okay.
Man.
It's a super powerful card. You're right. Right. Like in the right circumstances, it's obscene.
It is.
They have to have 2 things. So either they're playing 2 things in 1 turn, in which case they're not that big, or they played a big thing the previous turn and I failed to kill it, which feels really bad. Right. Like you want to clear your opponent's board every turn of most Hearthstone games with most decks. Like that's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. If they play something big and you ignore it and then they play something big and then you blow them out, it's like, that's not really how games tend to play out.
Yeah. I feel like Dark Bargain should have been discard, like destroy 2 things, discard 1 card. Because I feel like 2 cards, like discard 1 card, I think Reno Lock might be like, yeah, sure, I'll put it as another Siphon Soul.
Mm-hmm.
But when you discard 2 cards, it's like, well,
it's like, man,
good job, bro.
It's like
equal value from both sides.
I pay mana for this crap. Yeah. I'm paying mana for this. I can't even justify it. Like, it's tough.
I'm just waiting for the day Cho'Gall is played.
I've just been sitting there collecting dust, man.
It's like
I played him. I actually played him in a competitive.
What? When?
Again, in a Moz vs. World. It was a wild format. Oh, okay. I jammed him in my deck.
Right.
100% win rate. I'm just saying. Thanks, Cho'Gall. Nice. Shout out to my boy.
Nice. Cho'Gall is actually a really good. You know, the next card might do for discard, I think, is going to be something like when this gets discarded, restore X health to your hero. I think that's what's going to happen because at this point, what we're missing is like they can't let you get another dude on the board because that would be broken. Mm-hmm. They can't really deal more damage. Fist of Draxus does that. If they make you draw cards, then what's the point? So it's kind of like restore health to your guy, which is kind of what Warlock also wants. So that might be the next one. And then Cho'Gall with discard mechanics becomes super fun because you pay health like for Dark Bargain, and you probably get it back out of whatever effect you discard. So that's the kind of shit that I want to see one day. That's kind of it.
Oh, man, that would be pretty crazy, janky. All right, well, that's going to be it for the show, guys. Definitely good stuff, man. Good talks today. Thanks for all the questions, everybody out there that tweeted or wrote in Twitch chat. But let's do some shout-outs. Zalay, where can people find you?
Twitch.tv/ZalayHS. And also on Twitter, I guess you can see it right there, at @LG_Zalay.
Awesome. And watching this weekend, too, at the NA prelims. Are you going to be playing from home or...
No, you got to travel.
Yeah,
I'm going out to California.
Oh, you're going to California.
Short flight.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Cool. Very, very nice. Good luck there, man. Hope to see you qualify. I forget how many people get through in the prelims. It's
It goes to the top eight, and then one person from this event goes to BlizzCon.
Right. Okay. Cool. That's gonna be good stuff.
Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck. Play a new card, dude. Play a new card.
I'm so sorry.
Noxious. Where can people find you?
I'm on YouTube, NoxiousJellyChef, Twitch, Noxious_HS, and shout out to Complexity, just for being awesome at this point. I think the roster is doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. Crane did pretty amazing recently.
Yeah, he did.
Pretty hyped for that.
Yeah, it's always good. And for me, just shout out to you guys, to both of you guys for doing the show with me. Obviously, big shout out to Temple Storm for sponsoring the show and all their sponsors too. Actually, the Curse is now Twitch, so it's kind of like, you know... I guess they're keeping
they're
the same brand.
They're still independent in the way they work out.
Yeah, but, congrats to Kurtz, or at least for having Twitch obviously buy them out. That's really, really awesome for them. But you can find the VODs for this on YouTube. Same as usual, youtube.com/ChanmanV, probably later on tonight. The audios will be on iTunes and Google Podcasts and Stitcher and Pocket Casts and all that good stuff. That's going to be usually in the morning. Like sometimes it's like really quick, but for sure, it's going to be a good 12 hours from whenever I post it on iTunes. So definitely check that out. And did I forget anything else? I seem to always forget something. I'm shouting. I think that's it for this week. So for Value Town, for Slay, Noxious, and myself, Chan Man V, we'll see you next week. Later.
See ya.